When I was your age, I would lug 50 pounds of ice up 5-6 flights of stairs.
So what?
So what? So let's dance. I was alone. I never knew what could left me. Bah! Now, what the devil? The man's a menace.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast, everybody. Yeah, 2 weeks later, World Series is over, NFL's in mid-swing.
A lot to talk about, Kevin. How are you?
That's my voice, my co-host, Jeffrey Paul. What's going on, buddy?
Hello, hello.
We also have, boy, I forgot, what's your weight class?
Fat. my career is at junior middle.
Junior middle. Boyd Melson is joining us here in studio, folks.
The Rainmaker.
Yeah, man.
The Rainmaker.
He's here hanging out with us. He sounds like he's emaciated from the way he's trying to make weight here for the next... when's your fight, bud?
It's November 19th at the Foxwoods Casinos in Connecticut.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, next Saturday. Yeah, next Saturday. Not this Saturday, next Saturday. Wow. So he's going to be trying to cut weight like a motherfucker.
Yeah, now... Let's go over a little bit of Boyd Mendelson before we get into...
Who's Mendelson?
Yeah,
do you want me to go Melson. Get that guy?
Melson,
so
goddammit.
So all of a sudden, I've made you not only Jewish, but a Hasidic rabbi in the name.
I'll leave the payas. Yeah,
he's going to have the payas. He's going to have a yarmulke. He's going to be having like the book and a Torah as he's fighting. Okay. Okay, Boyd, I don't know why I'm calling you Mendelson.
I've been saying Melson.
Does he work in the Diamond District too, Jeff?
Yeah, in the Garmin District, the Diamond District. Okay, but let's talk about Mr. Melson's resume. I mean, it is pretty darn impressive.
That sound you hear in the background, by the way, is they're dumping copious amounts of ice into the ice machine. Yeah, so we're, don't let that take you down.
We're in the dungeon right now from the Broadway Comedy Club. Okay, so... 15-1-1 record.
That's it.
he's a slacker.
Yeah.
World military gold medalist.
That's some hot shit.
4-time U.S. Army champion.
Right.
Bronze medal winner at the 2005 U.S. Amateur Boxing Championship.
Right.
Okay. And this to me, this is pretty impressive. 2013 inducted into the National Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. Now, there are only 12 people in the whole Hall of Fame, but Boyd is one of them.
And my name, they just changed the spelling of it 20
right.
times.
Right. So
it's like they made it more Jewish.
Hold on, I got to add a few things, because I know you got some stuff off Wikipedia. I didn't make that Wikipedia page. I took a silver in the 06 U.S. Nationals. So I took bronze in 05. I lost to Danny Jacobs in the semis.
Oh, yeah, I know Danny Jacobs.
And then I lost to Demetrius Andrade in the finals in 06.
Another Lotsman.
Yeah. So, and I won the Armed Forces Championships 3 years in a row as well.
Boy was saying before the podcast, he's beat a few Marines' asses and does not want to let them forget that. So put that in your fucking pipe and smoke it.
Now, this is where it's going to make me and you feel even worse about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, tell me if this part is true. Degree in psychology, minor in nuclear engineering, and then on top of it, an MBA.
What are you, fucking Dolph Lundgren? I mean, he also had a degree in, like, is it chemical engineering and... Dolph Lundgren is one of the smartest motherfuckers in the world.
He's a doctorate, right? His PhD. Yep. Well, the real life Dolph Lundgren, the Klitschko brothers have doctorates as well.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, they do, and they're colonels in the Russian army.
Oh shit.
Yeah, the real life ones, they actually are. But Dolph, I think he speaks three different languages, or five languages.
Europeans are multilingual. They're better than us in that, that's for sure.
Well, we are. Like, we can go to Jersey and they'll understand us. We can go to Connecticut and hit our eyes and they'll understand us.
Right, but Massachusetts and Philly, that's where the lines are drawn. Those fucking people. They're missing a few chromosomes, that's for sure.
But this guy's done all this. I complain when I got to bring in my garbage cans on the fucking 2 days a week.
It's all right. I complain when I have to do that, too.
Listen, don't make me feel good about myself. I can't. I feel so inferior right now. It's ridiculous.
So how much of that psychology degree do you put to use when you are getting ready to mentally fuck with your opponent?
I do it for anything. I use it to make myself. Well, for example, one of the things I always say to my coach when we're about to go out, and the bell rings, I turn to my coach and I say, time to get punched in the face.
Right.
And walk out, and it kind of makes it comical. Because if you go in there trying not to get punched in the face, it's a really bad sport. It's almost like going playing football and trying not to ever get tackled. I mean,
it's called being a kicker.
Or
being a punter.
But so I think things like that make it a little more comical and keeps everything in perspective for me. and smiling. If I get tagged, put a smile, not because I'm trying to be smart, but like, that was a good shot. So I've never once done anything that I know of to get, oh, I'll tell you what's funny. When I was in the Army and I was boxing for the Army, I used to get a lot of crap from other people in my weight class, and then also my teammates. They'd say I always tried to charm my opponents, because for me it was, I mean, I had my classmates in war at the time when I was boxing. They were getting deployed all the time. I'm very fortunate for where I was there, and I had a life I was looking forward to outside of boxing, after boxing. So it was always a sport. I'm never going to be angry at, they never did anything an opponent I was going to fight against. So I would stand by the scale, and I would joke around. I'd give him hugs. I'd say good luck. And after a while, I remember when I went to fight, I fought Keith Thurman at the Olympic trials. He just stared at the ground when we went to touch gloves. And I always say, I say the same thing now. When we're ready to go, I tap him, and I say, good luck, be safe. And I walk back to my corner. And it's funny when you say be safe, because I'm the one trying to hurt him.
Right,
but he refused to look at me because we had a friendship.
Right.
And he had told me always after. He goes, man, I always hated fighting you, boy, because you're a good person. And right. It was always hard for me to get angry at you.
You think they're going to let up a little bit.
Yeah, but I didn't do it for that reason. It was more the perspective of the world's much greater than us being in this ring right now.
Did you win that fight, by the way, or not?
I won the first one. I lost the second one.
Okay.
Against him.
What style fighter would you say you are?
I enjoy boxing very much, so I have my first ten fights. I was trained by Coach Joey Gamache, and Joey wanted to make me into a brawler, and he would yell at me irately in between each round, go harder, go harder. People have paid money for tickets, you have to go harder. And I never trained that way. I didn't fight that way ever. Well, as a result of that, especially against one specific fight I had, against a gentleman named Delenn Parsley here in New York, and that's on YouTube, and that was a war. He was 6'3", and I had a three-week crash course of learning how to not go backwards in a fight where Joey stayed right behind me with his fist, and anytime I tried to go back during sparring, he put his fist in my back, so I couldn't go. Everyone started thinking that, Boyd just brawls, and I didn't grow up boxing, so I didn't grow up here on my boxing. I was out in Colorado. And then people on the pro scene saw this, but not the amateurs that came up with me, because I never fought like that as an amateur. And now I've had 6-7 fights since that, but that stigma still stuck. But it benefits me, whereas when I just won this WBC US title last year, I knew that my opponent thought I was going to come at him. And after the fight, he told my coach, he just really confused us. We thought he was going to try to fight the whole time. And I boxed the entire fight using my legs, and he didn't have a plan B for that. Maybe if he had a plan B going in, or maybe if his plan A was expecting that, it would have been different, but he never adjusted. So it almost benefited me that I don't like to fight. I like to box. I don't like to fight, but I have no problem at all having to put my shield up if that's what it's going to take to win.
Now, are you a counterpuncher,
counterpuncher.
So you're not forcing the action?
No. Now, if people just watched the last 7 fights I've had, they say, Boyd's right. If they only remember when I was with Joey, they say, what's he talking about? He doesn't box the way he thinks he boxes, blah, blah, blah. At my height with the computer scoring system, there's no way I would have won all those amateur fights in my weight class if I didn't counter, because you score points with the computer at length. You have to make it clear, because when I was boxing, you had one judge on one side, one on another, then two on one, and they click when they see you land. So you're trying to be parallel to where two judges are here and one here so they can see. So if I have you in the corner...
Is that CompuBox?
No, that's professional boxing's CompuBox. Okay. So this is just you have a little clicker. 3 out of 5 have to click within a one... When I was boxing amateur, it's no longer that way, within a 1-second window for it to count. So if I have you in the corner and I'm tagging you up, but only this judge and this judge right there can see it, but these three can't see it, they won't click. So you want to keep everything in the center. So it really benefits you. It takes some of the fight out of boxing. It makes it almost like tag. And it makes, once you get a lead, you can run, and it's if you have good legs. But that's how I was very successful. I was only throwing 2 or 3 punches at a time, and I was never sitting in the pocket. I had to learn how to do that with Joey. I hated it. But that's what I had my first 10 fights.
So are you... You're a Brooklyn guy. I know Paulie Malignotti. Okay.
You almost got his name right.
I can't.
He slaughters names every fucking week.
I can't say Melson. I'm gonna say Malignotti. Okay.
Malignotti.
Okay.
That's Staten Island. Please forgive him.
We had this conversation off air. Okay. Paulie was he wound up, I think, having to change his style a little bit. But he became a really like hit and get out, you know, super fast type of guy. And he's still fighting at a pretty high level.
He sure is. I care very much about Paulie. I was just a block away from his home today. One of his buddies, I have a friend, Paulie Gassi, lives a block from him. And he has a gym that's heated. His garage, he turned into a boxing gym. He gets it about 80 to 90 degrees, and I got to go over there this morning. He sent me Malinaggi's last two fights, trained there to help lose weight. So now he's letting me use his gym, which is heaven sent.
Nice.
So I don't have to go all the way to Manhattan for another workout during the day.
Right.
Well, Paulie, people haven't watched the documentary. Paulie's had so many surgeries on his hands, the doctor said that he should have never even had a professional career. So I tell a lot of people often, I believe that ability to generate power is one thing versus how you want your style to be. Now, Muhammad Ali's punch is very crisp, always bouncing and going off, stopping on a dime punching. I believe if he were to plant his feet down and try to hit you hard purposely like that, he could generate a significant amount of power. That's just not the way he's choosing. So Paulie had to amend his style based off of his hands. He didn't have the hands to do it. They were going to break on him. The doctor said he should not. It's impossible. They made a whole documentary on it. So it's a little frustrating when people talk about. Now, you have some people who are gifted, like Keith Thurman could generate abnormal power while he's on the move. Some people have those, but that doesn't mean...
Who's another fighter like that?
While they're on the move?
Yes.
Generate power like that. I mean, Pacquiao can generate power while he's on the move.
Just had an amazing fight over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he can do it, but Pacquiao would do it while going forward. Keith can do it while going laterally.
Right.
And that's very special, to be able to stop on a dime and generate so much on a dime.
It's like throwing off your back foot in football.
Yeah, I guess that's right. A good...
Tyson also could do it very good going laterally, meaning he was advancing forward, but he was still going left to right as he would, because I think it's how quickly they can turn their hips.
I'm trying to think of maybe of a guy like Wilfredo Gomez or Wilfredo Benitez. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of remember them having that type of style too. I mean, they're very elusive. They're very fast. They did generate some pretty good power, completely underrated, amazing fighter.
Well, Tommy Hearns, too, could generate significant power while he was moving laterally.
But big shoulders. And that's what I remember him and who was the guy, the Puerto Rican guy, Tito?
Trinidad.
Also generated the power from the shoulders. But
Trinidad, because his legs weren't that strong.
No, and he wasn't as elusive as Tommy Hearns was early on when Hearns fought as a welterweight.
That Hearns that beat, that was the Hearns that lost to Sugar Ray but was beating him almost every round.
15-round fight, by the way.
That that version, I don't think that there's a welterweight alive that could beat that style that Hearns invoked. The only reason he lost that fight is because he started to fight Sugar, because his bravado got up. When he was just he was just as fast as him, longer strength, the movement is impossible. I don't think anyone alive could beat if he stuck to that style, that the way he fought that day.
If that fight goes 12, if it was only a 12-rounder, he would have won that fight.
Yeah. Agreed.
He lost it like in the 13th.
He started winning in like around the 6th. He started tried to trade with Sugar, and then Sugar won maybe 3 in a row, and then he went back to boxing him, and Sugar couldn't do it. And then he started winning, so he decided to trade again. And then there's other intangibles, like discipline is a big one. And perhaps that just showed one of the things that made Sugar a little bit more special than Hearns at a certain thing was their ability to stick to a plan and be disciplined and not get arrogant. Because if you're winning. So let's say he got off the first time when he was winning, and then he tried to step to Sugar, and Sugar started beating him. That should have been it. He should have learned, let me go back and not go back to fighting again. But then he chose to revisit that same well again, and that's what happened.
How many rounds are you fighting this?
This is 8 rounds.
And how much time are you putting in to train for that?
Enough.
What's your schedule like? Like, you know, like a boxer schedule, like a comic schedule. We get up at 10, fights around for 2 hours, do a little bit of writing, go out by 4, come home 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's not the disciplined style of a fighter. So, just walk us through a little
completely
bit.
Completely like, opposite.
Yes,
especially the dietary fucking aspect of that.
Well, just tell me about it. I'm awful. Just walk us through like what like a fighter's schedule is going to be like, you know, leading up to the fight. How many weeks are you training? You know, is your diet changing big time? You know, how much road work you're putting in?
Well, there are differences. Whereas if you're a fighter and you don't and you're doing it because you love the sport and you're not making much and you have to work full time while you're boxing, that lifestyle is going to be different. If you've come up with this real strong pedigree, you have a lot of money behind you, where all you have to do is box. You have a different lifestyle there. If you're fighting a 4-round fight versus a 6-round or an 8-round or a 10 or a 12, The amount of training is different that goes into that as well. So everything varies with that. The majority of my career, I was working in corporate America the entire time because I had to support myself so I could donate what I earned. So with that, my life was pretty challenging. I would try to run during the afternoon, during lunch when I could, when I was at work, and I'd bring my plastics. And
what was your job?
Medical device sales rep.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was with J&J. Which company were you with?
I do pharmacogenomic testing, but I've done infusion, I've done pharmaceuticals, I've done wound care, I've done infusion, I've done it all. But yeah, which with Ethicon
the,
you with?
Yeah, I was with Ethicon.
And then, with them.
And then a startup one named Gauss Surgical. It's a blood loss measuring system. Mm.
Do you go running during your lunch break, Kevin?
Fuck out of here. I walk. My territory is the city, so I do a lot of walking. Yeah. Where was your territory?
Manhattan. It was Jersey when I was with Ethicon in Manhattan. I was the Northeast guy. It was a startup when I was with Gauss Surgical.
Oh, God.
So I had to bounce up to Boston sometimes. It was Jersey, Westchester, and Manhattan.
Right.
We were the first product ever of our kind, so it was easy. No hospital had it, and there was no competitors. So it didn't mean it was buying in, but I didn't have to travel far to find a place where they needed it.
Right.
And
so you're running during lunch.
And then I would.
How far would you run?
Anywhere between 3 and 5, no, like 4 to 5 miles.
Jesus
and then,
Christ.
And then in the gym from 8 till 10 at night. And then a lot of times I would, to battle making weight, I would run around 1 or 2 in the morning. I'd run up and down that West Side Highway so many times in the middle of the night. And sometimes it helps me sleep because when I'd come home so late, my endorphins are still going. And then I started developing the restless leg syndrome. That's a very real thing. Sure. I know whatever's causing it, I don't know, but it was a nightmare. And sometimes I'd run just to tire my legs out so I can go back to sleep. And that was a lifestyle that aged me, caused romantic relationships to disappear in my life.
Absolutely.
I had to switch jobs in the Army Reserve because it was becoming a little challenging, one of the units I was with. And I had to leave Ethicon because they weren't happy about certain things. And I ended up having to leave Gauss. I was let go from Gauss Surgical, because it wasn't. But I always knew what I wanted and what came first. And that was, at the time, trying to help fund a cure for paralysis. So I was not going to pass up. That was the most important thing in my life during those years, especially during those years.
And that's the other thing about Boyd that makes him like such a special guy. I mean, besides the resume we just read off, he donates every cent he makes in boxing to stem cell research, correct?
So it's not stem cell research. It's spinal cord. I just said spinal cord.
Okay.
I just said spinal cord research. It's all right that you heard Mendelsohn, but I just said spinal
God,
cord.
God, if you ever did your research on these guests, no, Jack,
that's
be
what
amazing.
It's, that's
I,
what
I know.
Said here.
Well, you got to tell Mr. Wikipedia
that's
friend.
That's what it
who,
said here.
Yeah,
this is the fact sheet that I have.
But I just said spinal cord research. Yeah, but boy, you don't know. I don't care what comes out of your mouth. It's what Wikipedia says.
I thought it was the
says.
Same thing. I don't know.
See, it's funny. So it's funny how you were in medical device and you were doing well. I don't know. I'm sure medical device.
I was doing pretty
yeah, exactly.
Well.
Medical device, you do well. I'm in this shit and I'm using this as to way to finance me getting the fuck out of medical sales.
I don't blame you.
It's
I didn't enjoy
worst.
It at all.
It's horrible. It's that corporate America matrix mentality. And I just don't get how people just want to kill themselves on a day in day out basis.
You don't enjoy it.
You know, for
you
example,
see my posts.
Yeah, I would imagine this dichotomy. I'm in a surgery with a neurosurgeon.
Right.
He doesn't know me from anyone, and they have egos are pretty high. And who's this new face in here? And they speak down to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, little does this guy know that I'm getting humanitarian awards for trying to find a cure that may help him make people walk again. But right now, the only thing that matters in his life is that he's the boss in this operating room and he gets to treat people however he wants to. So I'd have to sit with that. But what made it easier to let it go over my head always is because I think I got my classmates in the Middle East. This guy, if he's going to be an a-hole to me here, he's probably got bigger issues in his own life. So I'm not even going to worry about it. And I need to fund this damn cure for paralysis. So it always allowed me to escape from that. But I would say to myself often when I was working, if this is all I did every day, I'd slit my effing wrist.
Right, right.
I would, because it's they.
How bad is this job?
It's, you know, it's great if that's your personality type, I think, to an extent. But you have to – if you're yourself, you're not going to make it. You have to kiss –
phony creativity.
Yeah. And they don't want – and. You know, it's tough. You start learning, I think, and I think that...
Why, Kevin's so bitter.
I'm
serious? You should go. Worst. I wish that everybody that worked in a hospital had to go through basic training first, so they learned how to handle stress.
Right.
Because it seems like those are the most stressful positions, and a lot of them are the least capable at functioning under right. stress, and they take it out on us.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. Like, I didn't choose for you to do your job. You did, so why are you being mean to me? And that's what I'd have to go through often.
Well, like you said, you know, they're probably unhappy people. You know, they have to vent it and get it out some way. The poison got to come out somehow, and they take it out on everybody
else.
No,
it's the doctors being it's the God complex, especially with the neurosurgeon. They think there's no one fucking higher in the land. What do you keep pointing to me for, George?
Give it gold teeth.
And I don't mind that
all right,
they
that's a great drop in.
When it's time for them to start operating, I don't mind if they do, but you don't have a right to be rude.
Absolutely.
And little did
there's
they
know. Advantage to it.
And little did they know that you could probably tag them with a right cross and put them on their fucking asses in about 0.2 seconds, too. But that's another story for another day.
Now, you're also fighting this fight.
It's a whole different cause.
In Connecticut, yeah. Tell Kevin what that was about. We spoke about that a little bit before he got here. And this is pretty important to me as well.
So I grew up, not heroin, but I grew up, I have alcoholics throughout my whole family. And I grew up knowing addiction very well, not myself. And we all have addictions, but fortunately I never had a drug addiction. But I've had drug addiction throughout my family, alcohol being the one. And Staten Island was the borough outside of Brooklyn I spent my childhood on because being an Army brat, so we would go to Bailey Seton because they took TRICARE, that was the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then I had a lot of my childhood friends were stationed on Fort Wadsworth when it was a Coast Guard facility.
Right over the bridge.
Then I had some aunties on Arthur Kill Road I'd go visit often. And one of my cousins... He's 45 now, and his life is because of drugs, down spiraled. So my promoter, Lou DiBella, my unofficial promoter, God send to me Lou DiBella, he's taking care of my career. He put me in touch with a woman named Eve Goldberg back in maybe April, and Eve's son had died at age 23 accidentally overdosing to heroin, and she created a nonprofit named Big Vision for young adults with addictions. And he said, why don't you get in touch with her, see what her stuff's about? She's a good person to know. So she told me one of the things they do is they have these constructive events maybe once a month for all their members. They have about 100 different members throughout Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And when she told me this, I said, what type of event? She said, we do sporting events. I said, let me do a boxing workshop for you guys at my gym. We'll see if they give you a discount. I'll get some boxers to come. We'll take them through. We'll give them a little talk at the end. So we did it in May. We had about 20 of them show up. And in May, also, that's when a letter, I don't remember which, Staten Island Advance, maybe it was.
Yeah, that's the only newspaper out there, yeah.
Yeah. And there was an article written, and Mike McMahon at that time said that there were 40 deaths as of May that were reported. So Mike McMahon's the DA there, and reported, he said, is there more than 40? That's just what was reported. And what he put into policy, I don't know if it was affected yet, was that if you get first-time usage and you're arrested, you get sentenced, quote-unquote, to rehab as opposed to prison to give you a chance. And I loved this, and I keep stating this out loud, and I've had some pushback because people don't want to hear this because they associate a negative connotation, where I've said, if you're using, you're not a criminal, you're sick. And I've heard people say, don't use the word criminal because then they're going to think, if I don't use the word criminal, does that mean that people aren't going to think that they're criminals? It's almost like the same, the Army doesn't like us using the word suicide. Does that mean they're not committing suicide? They're committing suicide. So they're not criminals. They're not criminals. They're sick. And it's a chemical dependency. They're sick. Nobody right. wants to be sick. So when I read that and he put that in, I said, I thought to myself, I may be able to make a change here with this. And then I read another article in August, and in August it said it was up to 74. And this is just August now. So I have a friend named Ibrahim Kurtelis, who's a local voice of the people in Staten Island, and he's friends with Mike McMahon. And I said, can you help me get a meeting with him, please? Because we want to expose him to what Big Vision is doing, have a meeting with him, and see if we can bring...
Where's Big Vision based at?
Manhattan.
Okay.
See if we can bring it on over to Staten Island. And in that, I was... And then while I was... So that was in August that I asked him. So in September, we had the meeting. I was gone at the captain's career course at Fort Jackson, finishing up what I need so I can hopefully get promoted to major next April. And then I had an email, a text message from DiBella's people saying, are you interested in fighting? We're doing on November 19th, a Veterans Appreciation Day. We're going to three of the undercard bouts are going to be West Point boxers against Coast Guard Academy boxers, and do you want to fight on it? And I thought, you know, I originally had a plan. I said, I wonder if I were to fight next year on Veterans Day, come out of retirement next year in Staten Island on Veterans Day, and use that as a platform to start talking about the heroin going on there. and donate whatever I earn, and it won't be much, a few $1,000s, but it's more showing the effort putting forward. It may help create some spur about it, and stir rather. And then I thought, I'm here right now. Who knows what, I can get injured next year. I could be sick next year. I'm here right now. Let me go ahead and start this year. And then that'll give me even more time to start beating it down.
Right.
So I started, and I told him yes, and I had retired. I told my whole family I was done, and I was 30 pounds overweight. And I figured, you know, because I did this for boxing, when I did this for spinal cord injury, the universe brought HBO Real Sports in, and ESPN, and the Army Reserve made a mini documentary that won the Department of Defense Video of the Year, and things came. I believe the same thing could happen, even if it's just one fight. So what's come about because of this now has been New York One did a special, and they've been showing it this whole month. News 12 just did a special. I just helped brought some other big name boxers on, and we ran another workshop for Big Vision at Mendez. I was on the cover of the Staten Island Advance 4 days ago, I think it was, talking about this fight coming up. And now I've had two different boxing gyms in Staten Island reach out to me.
Was one of them DeMarco?
Reach out to me?
Yeah.
A guy named Nelson Hernandez reached out to me, and then Roston's gym, 10308 is the zip, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
And what was that gentleman saying? I'm going blank right now. So
it's a lack of food. We get it.
It's lack of everything. Lack of oxygen in my brain, a lack of everything. And so those are two more. And now when I go, I had a buddy reach out. Oh, BoxingScene.com is going to interview me in the morning tomorrow. I wouldn't be on Boxing Scene if it wasn't for this. And if I wasn't boxing and I tried to say the same message, it wouldn't come. But if I suffer and set an example, the universe conspires.
Do you ever team up with Teddy Atlas?
So that's the next thing I was telling you. Good old Teddy. I love him. Teddy, man, I've met him maybe 4 times. And every time I meet him, it's like meeting 10-second Tom from 51st Date. You ever see 51st
Date?
Yeah, yeah. And every time... I mean, I was announced in the ring with him at BB King's, where it was him, me, and like 4 other people. And then when they said, from West Point graduate, and I came in, and he was, oh, boy, and that was the first time. I said, yeah, my coach is Ray Bro. Oh, I love Ray. You know, I go up there, and I announce the boxing matches. And now every 3 other times since then, I say, hey, Teddy, what's up? And I get, and I say, yeah, I went to, oh, you went to, well, let me tell you, you guys are something. I'll tell you. And then... All right, so now I had
he's
somebody.
He's distracted, but the greatest guy in the
world.
Yeah,
well, listen.
He works out at my gym.
The cops
you go to the
kids.
Gym?
Stop.
So then he said, I had a buddy who just interviewed me from boxing radio, and he said, I said, do you have a way to get in touch with Teddy? If you don't, I'm going to be on Jerry Cooney's show coming up, and he's friends. I said, we want to see if we can do a Big Vision event at his gym. Just let us use his gym so we can do it for people who are battling addiction in Staten Island. So I get a message from Teddy. It's 2.5 minutes long, and it said, he goes, hi, this is Teddy Atlas. I just want to say, you know, I hear you're a West Point cadet, or maybe you were a cadet, and, you know, it doesn't surprise me that you want to help because that's what you guys like to do, and this is good stuff, and I hear that maybe you're a boxer too, a professional, and, you know, this is great, you want to help, but, you know, we're already doing that. You know, our foundation, we got our big dinner coming up on the 17th, and you know, we've used some of the money to help pay some court cases for some of the kids arrested for using. So we're already handling that. And I'm thinking, that is nothing what I'm asking. We want to know if we could do an event at your gym. Just let us use your space. We'll even pay for it if you need to help kids with that, like a workshop. That's what we want. So I called my buddy after. I said, did you tell him first that I'm not a cadet? Like, I graduated 14 years ago, 13 and a half years ago? Because, yes, I did. And then I said, did you tell him that I don't want him to give us any money. It's so we can bring some people battling addiction and do a workshop at his gym. I told him, I said, so what happened? Where did he get lost in the matrix? So when I speak to Jerry today, I'm going to tell Jerry, I need you because I got to have another conversation.
He's done the Teddy dinner.
Yeah, he sure has. Yeah. I know.
I've been to that a few times.
I hear it's incredible.
It is. There's a lot of athletes, a lot of celebrities go there. I don't know if you know Tom Borowski. He's friends with Rolf. That's how he got in touch with you. And we had Tom here with Lenny Dykstra. And Tom usually gets a table at that.
I used to get when I was a little kid that I looked. My uncles used to always tell me I look like Lenny Dykstra from the Mets when I was like 7, and my uncles always booed me because I don't know why, but I always booed the Mets growing up from no reason. I like the Oakland Athletics for no reason.
Let me guess why. Bash Brothers.
I don't even know who I was 7.
All right.
I don't even know why that I did it. Maybe it was just to antagonize them.
Right.
But they always would get mad because I would get up and boo the Mets, and when you're 7, you can get away with it. No one's really gonna. But I loved Lenny because he played with his heart on his sleeve all the time.
You should listen to that if you have the time. Go back and listen to that podcast or listen to him on Stern. He dropped some fucking megaton warheads of information talking about boozing and drugging and banging broads left or it's fucking.
In other words, the 80s.
Exactly.
The 80s in sports.
Yeah.
Imagine there was social media back then.
Oh, my God. All these athletes now, like the retired ones, like we would never have been able to survive in that time frame with all the fucking Twitter and bullshit.
Mickey Mantle?
He was openly he's openly cheating. Yeah, exactly. Mickey Mantle was blatantly cheating on his wife nonstop. Now, they had TMZ back then. They would have never – their marriage, I think they held on for the end, but they would have gotten divorced a hell of a lot quicker.
Okay, you know what? This is a perfect segue into the next topic.
Hold on 1 second. I just want to say this is a hell of a story for me, man. That's amazing shit what you're doing and what you've done for the cause. And I look at Jeff, I'm like, don't you feel like a colossal piece of shit?
Wait, how did I open this show? I said the two of us, you know, we are going to feel worse about ourselves.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's also very inspirational.
Yeah, man.
And
that's
I was
that's
writing down
story,
some
man.
Stuff here that like, I would like to get involved with this.
We need it.
Vision.
Sure.
And you know, we have some ideas that we can help out
so
with.
So this gentleman who's helping, letting me use his, my buddy Paul Gossi, who's letting me use his gym right now. He's a nutritionist, and he said one of the reasons why people aren't understanding the synergistic approach is, and it was what the gentleman over here was saying earlier, is when you inject it in, the substance, the chemical inside, gets trapped inside your cellular membrane. So even if you try to go to rehab or if you try to withdraw completely, it never leaves. It has to be able to get outside of the cellular membrane so it leaves your system. And there are certain types, like the way toxins come out, but that right. can't. So there are certain types of homeopathic type products you can take that allow things to pass in and out, and so you're never going to be it out of your system unless you quit, oxygenate your system through exercise, and then you take some of these products. So what I'm going to have him do is come with me when to speak to them. So when we go to speak at the gym, everyone that's there is going to want to get off or they wouldn't be there. And this is nothing like a prescription medicine. This would be like – it's not vitamin C, but it's stuff you get like a vitamin C, and you take these things, and it helps the crap come from inside the cells.
You know what? Fuck this medical assistant job. You know,
big difference.
Let me finish my point, dopey. Okay?
Right. Medical assistant, that's just someone who barely got out of community college.
We know more than the doctors do about the crap that
we're
selling.
Sure we do. Yes, you do. And they get mad we know more about it, too.
What you should be doing is going around to schools and having assemblies and getting people at the early entry and you know doing early prevention before this shit like you know runs rampant. It's starting to run rampant now, but get it. I wouldn't even wait for the high school level. I'd say the junior high school level where they're more influential, where they're not going to do this stuff when they get into high school.
Yeah, those kids are fucking in the bathroom already in middle school.
Absolutely,
which is crazy.
Well, I hope my intention is to run for office in 2018, and that's going to be a big platform of mine.
Jesus Christ. When do you have time for anything else?
Well, there's a reason I don't have children or a wife yet.
There you go.
I'll put it on hold.
Well, put that shit on hold for a while longer.
I wrote a joke today.
A joke? Good for you.
That was my productiveness. I wrote a joke.
The comic, that's a comic mentality we're making fun of. They're lazy fucking people. I think I know where you're going to go, Jeffrey Paul, with the transition. What do you want to talk, World Series or NFL?
Let's go World Series.
Yeah.
We'll do a little NFL, and then we'll wrap things up here with the movie. Baseball fan, Boyd?
Casual.
Did you watch it?
I'm getting older. I've been paying so much with boxing, politics, and the NBA are the three. But, of course, I stayed up on who has the series. I just wasn't watching it. And if I wasn't cutting weight and if I wasn't training, I would have watched it more. My life has shut down the last 3 weeks especially.
Understandably. Now, you went with the Cubs during this?
I sure did.
And I took the Indians. I said Indians in six?
I think I said Cubs in six.
Did you hear about that guy in his 1993 yearbook? He wrote 2000 for his cool thing. He wrote 2016 Chicago Cubs 2016 World Champions.
No.
No.
Tell the story.
That's the story. It was, okay. 23 years ago, right? So he just wrote, was 1993 rather. Yeah, he wrote in there for his yearbook. He said he just had a dream about it that night, and he put it in, so they had him on the news, and it came true. And they brought him on the news before the World Series started. No, he didn't bet it.
Dope.
You can't bet at night. Do they allow you to bet something 23 years out?
No, but you could have went to Vegas this year before the season started.
Like, if he was so sure of his prediction, yeah. You do that stuff at the beginning.
But it's hard.
That's what I do with the NFL.
But it's been there since 1993, written in the yearbook, which is out of this
world.
That's
crazy, right?
That's pretty cool.
So he had a dream.
Here's one of those nice, like, feel-good dad-son stories. Did you see the story about the guy who drove to his father's gravesite for Game 7, parked the chair next to his site? Right. He listened to the game at his father's gravesite with Game 7 with the radio on, sitting there in the fucking dark.
Was he a Cubs or Cleveland?
Oh, no, they're Cubs fans. And at the very end, when they fly the W, if they win, he like laid the W over the tomb, and that was it. That was almost my mother.
Penny Marshall film.
Yeah, I was like, it's good. My dad's still alive, so all right. But he didn't give a shit about sports, so who cares?
I wait to make three grown men almost tear up here, Kevin.
Dude, anytime Field of Dreams is on, I'm like, all right,
father,
prepare for a little dustiness in my house.
Father and son playing the catch.
Yeah.
For love of the game gets me.
I like that film too.
I'm obsessed with that.
It's movie. Everyone. A lot of people shit on it. I don't.
Why? What are they?
Because it's not as good as Field of Dreams.
No.
Because it's Kevin Costner in another baseball and it's not as good.
Well, it's his third baseball film at that point.
Yeah, Bull Durham is too.
Right, but I think if For the Love of the Game would have came out before Field of Dreams, I think it would have been held in a little bit higher state.
You know what I hated, though? I hated this one thing. I hated the uber anti-Yankee sentiment where they're the guys. Yeah. I'm a Yankee fan. I don't care you hate us. But every time they had that one guy like in the airport bar, remember him? The guy was just getting shit in the bar. He's like, fucking New York Yankee fans. I'm like, enough. Okay, you want to throw a joke or two in there? I get it. Fine. But that was like the one thing I'm like, all right. Obviously, the guy who wrote it's a fucking probably a dirty Red Sox or a Mets fan. I don't know, but. That's one thing, but I liked it otherwise.
Every time I've dated a girl, I make her watch that movie with me.
Oh, really?
That's your go-to movie.
Yeah, that's my go-to sport. That and the Rockies. If they don't, that's a double's a deal breaker. They haven't. I asked them on the. Have you ever watched the Rockies? They say no. I say, well, talk later then.
Funny.
What do you think of Creed?
It was really good. Actually, my buddy, he's a business analyst for the business consultant for the Yankees, Ray Negron. You ever heard of Ray?
Yeah, I know him. Yeah, I know the name. Absolutely.
He's submitting my name to see if they need somebody extra for the Creed sequel. So hopefully.
Are they doing a Creed sequel?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the next franchise.
Against Ward. Stallone's a genius to be able to give longevity to his character without him having to be the one boxing.
I didn't mind Rocky Balboa.
I thought it was great.
I liked it.
It really brought a lot of closure to a lot of things.
You know what got me was I read online by accident. They go, he's going to die in Rocky Balboa. And I saw him like, no, I didn't want to see that. So in the very end when Tarver's tagging him up and the room's spinning and it's just like slow motion, I started to, I'm like, don't you fucking
die.
Don't you fucking die. My wife saw me and she goes, what's up? I'm like, I'll tell you later. And he didn't die. Like, oh,
and then
God.
They said in Creed that he may die also.
Right.
Because he left some type of, I don't know what it was. It was ambiguous where they show him. It was a picture of him finishing with a cigar down Stallone, and it said like the word "dead" on the print that they showed, but he did it on purpose. I don't know. What I loved the most. Absolutely, get people to want to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
What I loved the how cool my mama is. Mama called me and said, "When are we going to see Creed?"
Wow,
that's a good mama.
I loved Creed in the theater, and I loved Stallone for how vulnerable he was at the end of that movie.
You know, this little subtle thing. I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No. That's okay. Finish your point.
Well, two parts. Well, Rocky Balboa. I thought they had the best. I watched Rocky for the monologues that Stallone, the character that Rocky gives.
Did you like the monologue in Rocky IV?
At the end with fucking
Gorbachev. Oh, if I could change, you could change, we all could change.
Yeah, come on, that was great.
It was good for 80s cheesiness, and it was all.
Go out there and do it. What? Yeah. Win.
Listen, when we're all done, I'm going to show you a little clip on my phone, because I've become Paulie from Rocky is my Uncle Bert, and he invited me to his
apartment. He's your uncle?
Not
in real life.
I'm just kidding.
He invited me to his home to show me his art. He's got a heavy bag in his bedroom, and I got him to start hitting the bag with me. It was like a dream come true. I'll show it on my phone after.
That's hilarious.
But Now, he has the best lines in part four when he goes, remember all that stuff I told you back there? Forget it. Yeah. Remember when he says, I wish I could be anyone in the world, I wish it was you.
I also enjoyed it back. I loved four.
I love three.
Loved it. I loved them all.
You know what I love? In Rocky, yeah, I agree. In Rocky Balboa, when Rocky says, I still got stuff in the basement, and then Paulie goes, what, you haven't peaked? That's like saying that to a 60-year-old man. He goes, peaked, Jeb. But, you know, I wish that they had I wished one of the monologues – I felt they missed out a spot in Creed. You remember when Rocky was telling Adonis not to – during the press conference, don't fall for it, when he was trying to get a rise out of him, and then he ended up falling for it? I felt that was a great time when they were alone after, when Rocky could have had a talk with him about not letting somebody get in your head and you controlling your fight from within or something to that extent.
Right.
He kind of just let it go. And I thought they were going to have it because the next scene showed him in the hotel room with Adonis waiting for his girlfriend to come in. But I thought he was going to use that as an example because that's what I live for, the metaphors for life off of all the Rocky movies.
Right.
The little subtles, like with when he was going to fight Antonio Tarver, and Antonio Tarver goes, you're crazy, and he goes, you'll get there. Like the little things.
You relate to that.
Yeah.
My favorite Paulie line was in Rocky Balboa. He says, oh, about the Italian restaurant. He's like, what? You got a bunch of Mexicans cooking Italian in the back? Love that. I'm like, that's true too.
I've met and hung out with Burt Young a couple of times.
Did you tell him how much you love Back to School?
I did like Back to School.
I love Back to School. Who doesn't?
Great
Ronnie.
Movie. But do you know that Burt Young wanted to be a comedian? And he just said he just never had like it in him to get up and go on stage. I mean, the guy's a great actor. You know, I'm sure he's done like, you know, these solos or monologues. But he never, you know, he said that's the one craft that he admires the most is comedy.
As they should.
Do you also know he has 17 pro fights as a boxer?
Did not know that.
Know that he and Adrian were a couple?
No shit.
No, Shire?
He could have married into royalty.
Unless you know another Adrian.
No.
Adrian Peterson, I know.
Adrian Barbeau.
Adrian Broner.
Yeah,
Adrian
Brody.
Yeah, and it's funny because when
that
he said
that.
That
would have been a better story if it would have been Adrian Brody.
Because I said, Broner.
I'm going Adrian Brody.
Talia Shire, the wet blanket of any fucking wife role in a film in the history of mankind.
The wet blanket.
Oh, you know, God. You want to hear.
The movie hole.
Exactly. Oh, she was she was a Death Star of fun.
I said to him, when did you guys become a couple? Between which? He goes, I don't remember. Like, which during the set? And I paused for a second. He said, that's kind of incestuous. And he started laughing. And he said, that's what Stallone used to joke on us saying. And he said, but you want to know the truth? He said, Stallone
was during
was
one?
No. You know, she was in five of them. So was Paulie. So it could have been any of the five. And then Paulie, and they were brother and sister throughout all five.
Yeah. Wow. Did Cuff and Link date her too or no?
But then he said Stallone was a little jealous of him that they were a couple.
What? Stallone was banging.
He had Jennifer Flavin.
Wait, that's not what matters. What matters.
Dude, he has tens all around. I don't know. Talia Shire is at best a six. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, come on. She's better than that.
Well, I think she's
a Vegas six.
She's gorgeous. Better than a six. Come
on. Gorgeous, like gorgeous. They had to dial her down for that role.
Rocky 3 was maybe she looked the prettiest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine,
but even in part one when she was shy with the glasses, because they said that they at first didn't want her because they said she was
look.
Too
we got
in
it.
Love with her.
You must like Tina Fey.
No, I don't.
Sarah Palin.
I think Tina Fey's pretty fucking pretty too.
I think she's very cute.
But you know, they said that Talia Shire was too pretty for that role at first. So they had to dial her down. They didn't want someone to be as pretty based off how she looked in The Godfather. So you saw they put the hair up funny, the little gesticulation.
Another wet blanket role for her. She got beat up in The Godfather and all that. She was just like, eh.
Oh, Godfather was great.
Well, that was great. Amazing. But what the fuck I was going to say about that, too?
I can't believe how fast
But no, here's
going.
The thing. If you are used to getting whatever woman you want and any woman says no, and then you see someone that you think doesn't deserve her like you do, it's going to hit your ego.
Yeah, I mean, he's an ugly fuck.
Yeah, thank
I'm sorry.
You, 16 Candles.
I love John Hughes. His films are timeless classics. I want to dig him up and sue him for all the false information he gave me about women and how I wasted my middle teenage years trying to pine for some girl. Say anything. Fuck you, John Cusack. That shit also affected me. Yeah, I had a lot of bad info given to me via the films.
What year were you born?
76. I turned 40 on Saturday.
God, man, you look great.
Thanks, man. Thanks, brother.
I'm 35. I thought you were at most my age.
Oh, shit.
Right, can we stop talking about age, guys?
Dude, agent, listen up, fucker. Get me better gigs. I'm working on that. So, yeah, let's get back to the series. Cubs.
Evan, 33.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, 35. Johnny Watson, 39.
Johnny Watson's going to take home 45.6 is your final tally for Trolls.
50 was my guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so this last one is the tiebreaker.
Okay.
And I think I know who's winning this.
Oh, this is, yeah. This is easy peasy. Jeffrey Paul's disdain for comic book films continues as we talk now about the film Doctor Strange.
Because I'm not a nerd.
He's a nerd. Believe it. You should see his fucking music collection. It's disgusting. Doctor Strange with Benedict Cumberbatch as the title character, another Marvel film. The reviews have been stupendous. Yeah, Jeffrey Paul, what were the numbers from us?
It's a little embarrassing here. Kevin, 47. I went 24. But I'm only to be worsed by Johnny Watson, who's another comic boy, 17. Kevin, what's the number?
Oh, well, listen, I win, of course. Yeah. But I grossly underestimated 84.9.
Jeez.
It took a fucking treasure trove home. I didn't know. I just thought, people aren't going to care about this one. The reviews were great. It did fantastic.
What new characters did they introduce besides Doctor Strange?
I did not see this yet. I don't know.
I actually want to see it. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's. I think I may end up going to see it on Friday. Okay.
All right. So now here's where you jump in, Boyd. Right. So let's get him involved.
Cool thing. When I was a cadet at West Point, one of the perks when We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson came out, they gave us a screening 3 weeks before it came out. And the juniors and seniors, we all got to watch in this big auditorium. And then when it was all done, we were still sitting. We started clapping. Who stands up? Mel Gibson's in the audience. Everybody's there who's in the movie watching.
Wow.
And then the real life Colonel.
Right.
Westmoreland.
Right.
Hal Moore was his name. Hal Moore.
So
they all were there watching the movie with us the whole time in the closed art for us cadets. It was pretty neat.
Did you yell out, "This was all right, but make another fucking Lethal Weapon film, God damn it."
They have a series, TV show, Damon Wayne's
I son. Refuse to watch
I
that.
I watched it. I
refuse to watch it.
Stop.
Because 1, 2, and 3 are
brutal.
Excellent. Oh, no, 2 is my favorite. 1 is great. 3 is decent. 4 is a fucking piece of shit the more I watch it. So, okay, here we go. New films. Wow, we've got 8, so we have to bang through this. We're going to call
We have 8 of these?
8. Well, 4 and 4 we have here. Okay. Actually, 3 and 4.
Right.
Next, first one, we have this called Almost Christmas. It's an all-black family story.
Ugh.
Wow, Jeffrey Paul, keep your racist thoughts to yourselves for this one.
No, this just looks like complete fucking hack dog shit.
It's
coming from the guy who saw Madea opening weekend, I find this very hard to believe.
The trailer is brutal.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. Everything is a function of where you've grown up and what's funny to you based off your life experiences. No, not at all.
Not this one. Wait till you see the
trailer. Everything that you just said prove what I just said.
Exactly.
Because none of your life experiences.
He grew up on Staten Island, all right?
That's not true. I grew up a black Baptist in Georgia.
Guys, so all right. This is all. That's all I grew up. I'm a mix with black and white, African American and Caucasian.
Are you?
My father's Louisiana Creole, light skin. Beyonce's color with the light eyes. So this is all I love. I'm dying to see this movie. I laugh at these
jokes.
Are
you fucking with me?
Not at all.
All right, there, Eminem. Why don't you give us a guess then? Yeah. Opening weekend.
But I'm being realistic. So maybe it'll be around maybe 15 also.
I've got 21. Jeffrey Paul.
God.
Are there any other? Oh wait, is there a Tyler? Wait, Tyler Perry?
This is a Tyler Perry.
No, I know it's not. I'm on my shit. I didn't know if there was another holiday one that Tyler Perry was coming out.
If he did, I can't.
This is coming out Thanksgiving.
It comes out this week.
Yeah.
I'll go up to 20 million with this.
Okay, you're going 20. Kevin's going 21. And you know what? I guess people like this shit, but I guess
you mean black people.
No, it doesn't have to be black. It just looks like the most cliche, like lazy writing, cheap jokes. Like in the trailer when the I think it's Gabrielle Union's in it and she's trying to climb through the window. Guy gets behind it to help push her, the old black woman's walking by and goes, ugh. Come on, man. That has nothing to do with.
I bet you people walk out of that theater going,
I sit there going, ugh.
Give me a number, Jeffrey Paul.
I'm going to go 25.
Jesus Christ. We're all on top of each other. Okay. Next film coming out. I'll give you the budgets if I found them or not. This one, a budget of $50 million. This one with Amy Adams. I'm going to call this film Contact Part 2, if you remember that one.
What's the name of the movie?
Arrival.
I can't wait to see this.
I have no desire to see this.
I can't wait. It looks I'll say 25 with this.
Ooh. Jeffrey Paul?
who? Give me a little more information.
Amy Adams, Forrest Whitaker. I forgot who the fuck is.
I bet you this is again. I'm getting nominated for. It's got the type of cast and.
What is it about?
It almost looks like an Independence Day type.
Yeah, like that, but not as cartoonish violence. It's like they're more about trying to make communication with the aliens and have a relationship.
Did Amy? What was her name?
Amy Adams. I just said that.
No, but who was the woman with Matthew McConaughey? Didn't they make a movie like this?
Interstellar.
No, who's Jodie Foster?
She did Contact.
Well, that's Contact. Long time ago.
That was 1995. I saw it in the theater. That sucked.
You didn't like it?
No, it was her dead dad. Okay, we get it. How cute.
You're saying big names and
a lot of big. The
it's
type of guys
this week.
And it's got some, besides Forrest Whitaker, it's got another big like.
They do. I forgot.
I'm gonna go bigger. I'm gonna go 35.
I've got 29.
It's got the. You can usually tell when certain movies, even if it doesn't get the everyday Joe liking it, are gonna end up getting nominated, and this seems to be.
It could. We have here next one's called Shut In, the story of a ghost haunting Naomi Watts after haunting her and her son after her husband dies in a car accident.
It's after Halloween. Nah, people don't want to see that stuff anymore.
They missed the boat.
I'm going low on this. I'm going to go 11.
You fucking piece of shit. That's what I have.
Five.
Change it.
Five.
Boy, I got Boyd down
you know,
to
I'm gonna,
five.
Fuck. I'm going to split the difference when you said. Seven, yeah. I'm going to go eight. Eight.
You can say eight.
I'm gonna go eight. Yeah.
You're going eight. What's it called?
Shut In.
When's this? You got that movie with Colin Farrell coming out, The Beasts.
I do. Now this is the next batch. This is the next batch. But before we get to there, a boxing film. How timely!
This is the one I want to see. Vinny Pazienza.
This is a story.
Am I saying it right?
Vinny Pazienza.
There's no Love N him. Before the Z.
Love him.
God, he is.
So he goes by Vinny Paz.
Paz. Yeah.
So that's how you can remember. It's not like Ponzi from
no,
Happy
Days. I met him. And he signed this boxing glove for me, and it's one of the best autographs I have. He is a gentleman and an awesome, awesome guy, and I've always been a fan.
This is going to be the sleeper.
What's his last name again?
Vinny Pazienza.
Mm-hmm. Paz.
Paz, P-A-Z.
Pazienza.
Guess who failed linguistics 101, boy. Okay.
This is gonna blow out Creed, I even think. I think this one.
All
gonna...
right, well, then, if you're so sure, goddammit, give me a number, boy, Nelson.
What is
Oh, and the budget I have is $16 million.
What's the name of it?
Bleed for This. Miles Teller, who is in Whiplash, one of my fucking love. Well, I love Whiplash. I absolutely love that film.
Did you ever see that awkward moment with him in it? And Michael B. Jordan from Creed is in it.
I have not seen that.
He's in a lot of good movies.
Except for Fantastic Four reboot.
That wasn't his fault. You ever see Project X?
I did see that. Yeah, I like that too.
I love that
movie. Yeah, that was good. Monkeys, Matthew Broderick Project.
What number are you going?
I'm
going
to go opening weekend, slower than the bigger things. So I'll go with 25 for the opening weekend. But I think this is going to end up being huge by the time it's done.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll catch on. I think it'll take a little while for it to catch on, but I think that could be classic.
It's a true story.
It reminds me of The Fighter. You know, that's in that vein where it's like a good serious movie. I don't know if I just underestimate people and they'll go see fucking Almost Christmas and not this. So I'm gonna kind of go a little bit low. I'm gonna go 21.
All it's gonna take is people seeing him with the halo on.
Yeah, been working out. Like, I heard him on Carolla talking about that.
I gotta go see this movie.
Who's playing Paz?
Miles Teller.
Okay.
I say, look, boxing movies, except for Rocky, do not do well typically. This is gonna be a word of mouth. It's gonna be a slow burn if it's gonna take off. I have 11.
Ooh.
Hands of Stone looked great, but that didn't do shit. So that's what I'm basing that on.
Did look good.
But yeah, it didn't perform.
Lee Schreiber works out at my gym. He's filming. He's playing Chuck Webner in the Bleeder.
Oh, really? Oh,
they're finally making a movie about Chuck Webner.
Yep.
Bayonne Bleeder.
Love him in
my boy Matthew Sykes is training him for it.
Love him in Ray Donovan. That show's great. We got two more. A Coming of Age Tale starring Woody Harrelson and the girl from True Grit, the reboot, Haley Steinfeld. Without even looking it up, God, I'm good.
Steinfeld.
The Edge of 17. Jeffrey Paul start off. Budget of $1.5 million, by the way.
That's it.
It's like a Juno. It looks like Juno.
That's
it costs
exactly
nothing.
What I think it looks like.
That's what they said. When
is it coming out? 2 weeks?
Friday. Not this Friday, the following Friday. So two weeks.
That's good. That's going to bring my number up a little bit. I think it's a sleeper.
I think it's going to be like $40 million.
I was going to say 31.
Going 40 on this one.
$6 million is my answer.
What did you say, Boyd?
40. 40.
And it's going to get nominated to what?
And what did you say?
Six. This does not have legs. No one's going to give a shit about this.
I
I'm going to tell you why in 1 second. The following film coming out is Fantastic Beasts, where to find them, the Harry Potter prequel. Everyone is going to give a fuck about that. No one's going to give a rusty shit about Woody Harrelson and a coming-of-age story. The budget on this film is a lofty $225 million.
They'll lose money.
I don't think so. Jeffrey Paul, why don't you give me a number then? Opening week.
Well, you know my feelings on these type of movies. I hate this type of movie, but people will go see it. I'm going to go 60.
I'll say 50.
I have 65.
You know what?
And I think I'm undercutting this.
I think the one with Woody Harrelson's going to hit it because in the previews they show a lot of accidents happening through social media, and a lot of teenagers can relate to that.
And
I think
that
a lot of them are going to be hitting there, especially teenage
what
girls.
What is it rated?
13, I think. PG-13.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to be hitting their parents up to take them to one. And it's a date night movie, and it's a kid.
I think everybody is going to say no thank you and wait on this one and go see the Harry Potter shit. If they open up Wings
what
and Wings.
What teenager is going to see Harry Potter?
Or they could
look at all these young nerd comics we deal with every day.
Or they could just do what I did. You see one, and then you hop out and walk.
But, you're right. But when you do that, which I do all the time, you don't pay for that second film. So they're not going to have that count toward the box office credit. So
hopefully they'll see that one first, and then they'll go see the other one.
Yeah, maybe. And that's all we have for today for the game here. What time we have? Holy shit, we're a little bit over. Yeah. Boyd Melson, you're fighting at Foxwoods next Saturday, the 19th. Excuse me. What time? Where can we find? It's gonna
be replaying on Broadway Boxing. It won't be aired live. You can go to GFL.TV GFL.TV, and they'll air that live. It's $9.99. Nice challenge. We have to go to Fort Dix and qualify with our weapons this upcoming Saturday. I always have reserve duty the weekend before when all I want to do is worry about losing weight. Well, I'm in the military, so I have to do it. That's
right.
What it is. Yeah, so you can go there. I'm going to use my little live thing on Facebook so people will have someone in the audience.
Good luck
on
the whole
thing.
Yeah, man. Good luck.
Good luck making weight. The fight will handle the stuff. I just want to make weight. That's all I'm caring about. I don't even. You know what? Once you make weight, you enjoy the rest of the day drinking and drinking and eating. And then when it's time to go to bed, you're like, I have to fight tomorrow.
Right. Right. Jeffrey Paul, where can we find you? Oh, Boyd, any social media you want to fire out?
Sure. So first name, B-O-Y-D, and then last name, M, as in Melson, M as in Mike, or M as in Mendelssohn.
I was just saying Mendelssohn.
Yeah, they both start with M. So it's M as in Mary, E-L-S-O-N. So Boyd Melson, I'm the only Boyd Melson on this planet. So Facebook, it's Boyd Melson on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Following people.
Right.
Guy worth
great story.
Following.
That's fucking a hot
absolutely
shit today. Great, amazing,
thank
very
you
inspiring.
Thank
yeah, man.
Could
have gone
you for
four
me
more
on
hours
here, guys.
Yes.
Jeffrey Paul, where can people find you?
Okay. Next week, I will be in Cleveland. I will be doing three shows in the Cleveland Comedy Festival.
Oh. Yes. That Dave Arena's baby?
No. He's actually doing the Best of Cleveland show. But I unfortunately cannot stay for the whole festival because I am going to be in, I think, Philadelphia on that Friday with Buddy Fitzpatrick.
Excellent.
I'm very close with Jason Cross that performs here. And,
oh, sure.
And then Damon Rozier, very close with as well. You know Damon? He's in a wheelchair, black dude, bald head.
Yep.
Yeah, he's three of our Team Fight to Walk galas. He did some comedy for us.
Hey, do you know Sergio Chacon? He's a comic friend of ours who's also a fighter.
Boxer.
Yeah, not the level you're at, but, you know, he's a real – I wanted to bring him here with you, but he, you know, he just couldn't make it today.
I don't mind if you ever want me to come on back.
We'd love to.
Dude, love to.
Are you kidding me?
We got to wrap this up here. I got bar shows. Who gives a shit? I'm going to be at the Reds in Kronstadt Thanksgiving Eve, November 23rd, and that same night later on, I'm going to be closing out the Brokerage in Belmore, Long Island. So,
whose show is that?
That is Kathy Arnold's show.
That's a good. You ever worked that room?
I have not. That'll be my first time.
Yeah, I've worked. It's a good room.
Yeah, that's that. So, at Kevin Goatee on Twitter, Kevin, and then GOOTEE, and of course, don't forget Comics Watching Comics. Episode 3 is out and coming out with a new episode on Wednesday after the election fucking hullabaloo dies down.
Who are the comics on the next episode?
Ron Barba and Natty Bumper Car.
Ah, I love Natty.
Yeah, that's that. At Comics Watching, thanks so much, Boyd Melson, for coming out and hanging
out
with us tonight. You guys,
really
doing a great story.
Job.
Check him out, and we're hoping
you,
of course, you kick the shit out of the guy you're fighting in what he can sign. We'll see you in a couple
Foxwoods
weeks.
Casino.
Foxwoods, sorry, Foxwoods. Kick the shit out of him in Foxwoods, and then we'll see you in a couple weeks at the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast, Sportsbook Box Office One
talking,
at
please.
Twitter. Of all people to say stop talking, you're the last one to listen to. I'm Kevin Goatee. That's Jeffrey Paul, Boyd Melson. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.